Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I remember when I was 5, I had a close relative, Uncle Sam. He was always nice to me until I turned 10. After that, he began to behave weirdly whenever we were left alone. He became very touchy and often gave me uncomfortable compliments. One day, my parents were out for a dinner party, and I was home alone. Around 8, I was sleeping on my bed when I got a call from Uncle Sam. I picked it up thinking he needed to say something urgent, but he was again being weird. He asked me what I was wearing and kept breathing heavily during the entire conversation. I asked if he was all right, to which he said, "He's just sad that I don't spend enough time with him like I used to." I was so naive that I let him gaslight me and even felt guilty for not being nice to him. I apologized to him. He told me that he would like to pick me up from school tomorrow and take me out for ice cream. He gave me a goodnight kiss on the phone, and I went to sleep thinking that I'd somehow misunderstood my uncle. The next day at school, I waited at the front gate when Uncle Sam came to pick me up. My class teacher, Miss Susie, saw me standing on the sidewalk, so she asked me why I was waiting there. I told her that my uncle was taking me for ice cream. Seeing me wait alone, Miss Susie decided to keep me company until Uncle Sam came. 5 minutes later, I pointed to the blue van that my uncle drove and asked Miss Susie if she would like a lift, as her house was in the same direction. But when Uncle Sam saw me with Miss Susie, he surely didn't like it. He didn't even greet her properly when she got into his car with me. Miss Susie sensed the tension, so when her stop came, she lied to Uncle Sam saying there had been an issue she wanted to discuss with my parents, so it'd be nice if he dropped her at my house. Uncle Sam's face changed color as soon as my teacher asked to meet my parents. He told me he'd take me for ice cream some other day and dropped both of us at our home. When we went home, Miss Susie took my parents to a different room, and they had a long talk that lingered for almost half an hour, and then she left. My parents sat me down afterwards and started asking me various questions about Uncle Sam, like how he behaved around me, whose idea it was to go for ice cream after school, etc., etc. I could sense a lurking tension on my parents' faces, so I told them the truth. I told them how I misunderstood Uncle Sam at the beginning, when he was being weird, but later on, he promised that it was just his unconditional love towards me. I saw tears in my mother's eyes and rage in my father's face. He called Uncle Sam and threatened to destroy him if he ever came near me. A few weeks later, he moved to another city to live close to my grandparents. When I turned 14 years old, I went to a reunion party held by one of my aunts. All of my relatives were invited there as well. I was enjoying myself with my cousins when I heard my mom asking my aunt about Uncle Sam. I too realized that even though everyone was there, Uncle Sam was nowhere to be seen. What felt even more weird was that my aunt took my mom aside to talk about Uncle Sam, as if mentioning his name was like breaking the most important rule. This got me more curious about finding out what happened to Uncle Sam. Once the party was over, I was sent to sleep with my cousin's sister Ruthie, who was 2 years older than me. We were casually chatting, lying on the bed, talking about boys, when I asked Ruthie, "Hey, how's Uncle Sam? I didn't see him at the party." Ruthie's face turned pale, like she had seen a ghost. She hesitated for a moment, then said, "Uncle Sam was arrested last month." I yelled, "What? Why?" My dad said, "He behaved very badly with a 12-year-old. Her parents called the cops on him, and he was sent to prison. The girl is now under therapy over some serious trauma." God, I couldn't believe it when I heard this. Who knew Uncle Sam could do something like this? Something inside me snapped, and all my innocence died that moment. I realized what Uncle Sam had in mind for me. I realized how my teacher saved me that day by warning my parents about this sick Sam. If Miss Susie didn't care to intervene, that unfortunate 12-year-old could have been me.
This incident happened during one winter break back in the early 2000s. So my buddy and I had just finished working out at our local gym. We lived in a fairly small community in Canada, and there weren't that many gyms around. After finishing up our workout and leaving the gym, my buddy, who we'll call Jim for the story, suggested that we go out for a rip in his truck on some of the back roads of a nearby mountain. On the way to this extremely steep-hilled area, we were having a great time, blasting music and making jokes. However, the closer we got to our destination, the snow started to get thicker. The further we went down the back roads, the more and more trees appeared. This changed eventually, and we reached a clearing in the middle of the back roads. Eventually, there came a point where the truck couldn't go further, as the roads were blocked with heavy snowfall. At this point, our only option was to head back, but as we turned, the truck made a wrenching noise and tilted to the left, getting stuck into a snow pit. We checked Jimmy's truck to see if there was anything we could do to dig out part of the snow to help make it easier for us to exit. But unfortunately, we forgot to put a shovel in the back of his truck. I offered to run to a nearby town to get help. After running for a few minutes, I understood what I was doing could potentially be a bad idea, because the snow was extremely deep on the section of the back roads, and I only had my phone's flashlight to make out my way. In addition to that, we were in a super remote area, meaning if anything happened to me, like if I slipped and got hurt, it's extremely likely that nobody would know for a while. Hence, I decided to carefully walk back to the truck. When I met Jimmy back at the truck, the sun was gone and a thick fog sunk into the clearing we were in, making the lack of visibility another stressful element of the experience. After what was probably about 20 minutes of darkness and fog, headlights came into view in the fog ahead of us. A man stepped out of the truck that came through the fog and walked over to our truck. The man lightly tapped his fingers against Jimmy's window, signaling for him to lower the window. Jimmy lowered the window slightly. "Are you in trouble?" he asked. We explained the situation to him exactly. The man agreed to help us. We also told him that his truck was the only one we had seen since we started driving back on the road. The man explained that he lived in a small cabin just up the road and wanted to go out and drive around with his truck on this particular night. The man then turned around and walked back to his truck and pulled out a chainsaw. He then proceeded to walk back towards our truck. Just before reaching where our truck was, he departed from the clearing in the road and walked over to a nearby tree in the wooded area on the side of the back road. He then cut a few skinny branches off the tree with a chainsaw. I got out of the truck and walked over to him while he was still doing that, and asked him what he was doing in a polite and curious tone. He said we could use the small branches to help prep our truck tires on top of the snow, and then we'd have to rev the engine a bit and reverse the truck to get unstuck from the deep snow. After we managed to get the truck onto the part of the road where the lighter snow was covering, we got out of our truck and thanked him. But he left, disappearing into a thick fog from when he came. You must be thinking, what's scary about that, right? Well, a few weeks later, I was watching the news when I saw that same man who helped us that night on the television. He was charged with the murder of five women who he picked up as hitchhikers from the highway. He would take those women into his uphill cabin and do unthinkable torture, using the same chainsaw he cut those branches with to prep the tires. I remember seeing rust on the chainsaw, which now I feel wasn't rust at all. The man smiled when the reporter asked him why he did it, and what he did. His eyes didn't even blink. He just kept smiling until the news channel shifted to a different news story. It scares me to think that the one who saved us brought hell to others.
My name is Aisha, and I wanted to share a certain memory that still haunts me to this day. So this incident happened 7 years ago when I was 16 years old. I come from a big family. I have two brothers and five sisters. I shared a room with one of my sisters, Ray. As sisters, especially with only a little over a year between us, we would fight a lot. And there's one thing we both do that guarantees to piss the other off. We take turns in locking the room and taking the key for that day. So whoever has the key that day rises to the power of commanding the room. Might be weird, but it's normal among sisters. This one night, most of us were scattered around the house doing our own things when Ray and I got into an argument over something silly. I called Ray a witch and stormed off to my room, and she replied with an F-bomb, which wasn't anything new in our lives. After our fight, I went to cool down in the kitchen. I just wanted to eat something. I made myself a sandwich, watched Walking Dead while enjoying it, and when I was finally calm, decided to head up to my room for a much-needed shut-eye. As I showed up at my door, I looked down. I figured out Ray had switched off the lights and probably went to sleep. I twisted the doorknob and it was locked. I've guessed it right. Ray vented out her anger by locking me outside of the room, and that day, she had the key as well. I kept banging on the door and asking Ray to open it. "Ray, don't be such a jerk! Just open the door!" No answer. "Look, it's not funny anymore. Just open the door." And still, no answer. I was about to snap and finally yelled in frustration. "Just open the damn door, Ray! This is my room too!" All of a sudden, I heard my sister shouting from downstairs. "Stop screaming, dude! It's 1 a.m. I turned back to the door, extremely confused. If Ray's downstairs, then who the hell is in my room? I twisted the doorknob once again, and this time, the door flung open. The room was dark, and the window was open. The wind coming from an open window made me thin. White curtains dangled like a flag. It was the end of November, so clearly chilly enough to not keep windows open at night. The moonlight from the window was illuminating the room. I stepped into the room and was about to switch on the light when my eyes went to the bed. Ray and I shared a bunk bed to save more space in the room. It was dark under the bed, and from that darkness, a hand waited on the floor. It was a pale, white hand, and the veins were too clear to avoid noticing. It was certain that someone had entered our room from the window and was hiding under the bed. It took me a few seconds to master the courage, and then I finally spoke. Who's there?" The hand didn't even flinch. The creepy silence remained just like before. I asked again.
I can see you. Come out or I'll call the cops.
That's when I heard the squeaky laughter. It was a woman's voice. Slowly, the hand started to move, and a woman, dressed in a patient's clothes, crawled out from under the bed. Half of her face had a burn scar with no hair on her head. Her eyes were bloodshot red, and she stood in the room like a creepy statue. She started tilting her from one side to the other while humming some nursery rhyme. I didn't waste any time. I made a run for my life. I sent panic through the house by screaming and hyperventilating. I was feeling a lot of things at once. My whole family surrounded me to see what was wrong, and as I told them what happened, most of them didn't believe me. But then my dad grabbed a baseball bat, and we all went back to check. The room was empty. The woman was gone. But once the light was switched back, we saw muddy footprints leading from the window to the bed. My dad looked down from the window, and he saw a silhouette of a person climbing down the pipe, then vanishing into the darkness of the street. Today, when I think of that woman, I suspect she was some runaway patient from a mental institution or just some crazy psycho who decided to hide under our bed with some ominous intentions.
My family had a cabin deep in the mountains that we enjoyed traveling to every summer. It was surrounded by dense forests that made you feel like you were escaping reality. To get to our cabin, you had to drive along a dirt road that would wind through several other properties, separated by wire fencing and a total of 5 gates. Each gate had a lock that we'd have to unlock to pass through. One particular summer, my fiancé and I traveled to our cabin with our family to enjoy a weekend. We went hiking, fishing in a nearby pond, and four-wheeling around, trying to spot any wild animal. On the day we were set to leave, my family packed up their belongings and decided to head out earlier than usual. My fiancé and I wanted to have a little bit more alone time, so we decided to leave later that evening. The day went great, and when evening came, we loaded our things into my truck, locked up the cabin, and started to drive back. By this time, the sun had set, and sort of shadowy darkness lurked around us. Because it was going to be more difficult to see, I drove slower than usual, avoiding to run off the road, or worse, hitting something I didn't expect to be on the road. The ride started about as normal as it always did. Every time we approached the gate, I would get out, unlock it, and drive through. Once the truck was past the gate, I'd go back and lock it up, and move on to the next one. I asked my fiancé to stay in the truck in case any bears appeared from the bushes. So far, so good, but as I made it to the fourth gate, things changed. This gate was located in a fairly large clearing, making it easier to see the landscape reflected in the moonlight. The clearing, while more visible, almost made me feel less protected, maybe even exposed to any potential threats. Despite this, I convinced myself that there was nothing to be afraid of. I got out, unlocked the gate, and drove through it. However, when I went back to lock it, I noticed a small light about 50 yards up the fence line. I could tell that the light was coming from a flashlight, and I could make out what seemed to be the figure of a man. I stopped for a moment and just watched, but nothing happened. The light and the man remained still. Shrugging it off, I thought maybe it was one of the other property owners. I closed the gate and started to lock it up when I heard a voice crying.
Help me! Help me!
I stopped what I was doing and started walking towards the direction of the flashlight. It was still. I called out to the man.
Hey! Is everything all right?
Just then, The flashlight started to move fiercely. In all directions, I could see the figure. This man, who was now racing towards me. He was sprinting like crazy, reminding me of that running scene from the movie Get Out. The person wasn't shouting or making any other noise, just running. As he got closer, I could tell he was dressed in dark clothing and carrying a backpack. Panic finally hit me. I ran back to my truck, jumped in, and sped off. My fiance asked what was wrong, but I lied to her, saying that just something startled me. She went back to staring out the window. We drove about a quarter of a mile before arriving at the final gate. I put the truck in park and hesitated for a moment, looking back down the road from where I had seen the man. It seemed to drag on forever, but after confirming nothing was there, I got out and walked towards the gate, my heart still racing, knowing I was bathing in the light coming from the headlights, and there was nothing but darkness around me. I felt the same feeling of exposure again, but convinced myself that there was nothing to be afraid of. I unlocked the gate, and as I made my way back to the truck, I glanced down the road again. To my horror, the person with the flashlight was once again running down the dirt road straight towards us. This time I conjured up the courage to yell out, "Do you need help?" Hoping the man would stop and respond. However, nothing changed. The man just continued sprinting towards us. At this point, alarm bells were going off in my head. I jumped back in the truck and once again sped off, leaving the gate wide open. My fiance, who could now see the man and the light, asked if we should stop and double-check to make sure that he was okay. I told her no. She asked why we were leaving the gate open, and I had no other way than to tell her the truth about the man. I told her that he was the one who scared the crap out of me previously, doing exactly what he was doing now. Her face went white, and it was clear that she understood that this man was following us. I raced down the road, periodically glancing in the rearview mirror. Slowly, the chasing freak with the flashlight began to fade, and we were surrounded by darkness once again. We eventually reached the canyon highway, turned off the dirt road, and headed for home. When we arrived later that night, I called my dad and told him what happened. He said that he had never seen anyone out that late before, especially like that. My dad then spoke to my uncle, who was heading up the next day, and asked him to keep an eye out for anything suspicious, but he didn't see or find anything. To this day, I have no idea or what his intentions were, but I'm glad we didn't stick around to find out.
I'm a 20-year-old female, and I'm afraid of shadows. So afraid that I never look down while walking in dimly lit surroundings. I can't even stand my own shadow. Weird, right? But I wasn't always like this. I work in a restaurant, and my shift generally runs from 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's a hectic job, with not so good pay scale. Now, I get a lot of anxiety attacks because I've been suffering from depression and poor mental health for a long time. But I've somewhat managed to overcome these issues with a lot of mental strength and exercises that help me cope with life. I often set off for long drives to calm my nerves after a tough day at work. It started with a simple drive with my friend, my boyfriend, or sometimes a family member. We'd buy drinks of some sort and drive down the road beside the beach in my town. One late afternoon, I got out of work and decided to go for a drive. I called everyone I knew, but no one was available to come with me, so I went on my own. I was having a panic attack after getting screamed at by a rude customer. I bought a couple of drinks and started to drive to a less traveled route, hoping there'd be less traffic on that site. I thought halfway to the right, my mind would mellow down. I was chugging the juice too fast, also, so after 10 minutes, I got the urge to pee. I tried to hold longer till I reached the town or found a fast food chain. But at some point, I was on the verge of losing control, so I had to pull over by a small car park. The car park's one way opened towards the sea, and the other way led to the thin cluster of palm trees scattered over. By this point, it was dark out, and the only lights provided were those pathetic streetlights that barely do much. Half of them were flickering, and the rest of them were broken. The trees were moving with the wind, and I went behind one of them to relieve myself. I was doing my business when I heard a noise behind me. I looked back and saw a moving shadow of some sort behind the tree that was closest to me. It was bobbing down and then up, repeating this before slowly moving to the next tree and doing the same. I quickly stood up, and this realization hit me. My car was at some distance, and the shadow was getting closer each second. I was watching the shadow like a timid rabbit, unsure what to think of it. I slowly started to walk back to my car when the street light hit the shadow. The first thing I noticed was a very scrawny and somewhat skeleton-like figure. Oh my God! Is that a ghost? This is the first thought that came into my mind, but no. The owner of the shadow slowly peeked behind the third tree, and it was an old man. He had 3-4 hairs on his massive, wrinkly head, and his eyes, damn, those creepy, wide eyes. His body wasn't in complete control, so he kept twitching every 5 seconds. He had no shirt on, and I could only see his upper body. His bony fingers had dirt-filled nails, as if he dug the ground every day. I could feel cold sweat rushing down my spine as he watched me and I watched him. We both weren't blinking since our eyes met. Suddenly, he smiled, and it was the worst smile anyone had ever given me. Most of his teeth have fallen out. The rest was dirty and had started to rot. The wind was so heavy that it brought the old man's foul odor to my nose. I kid you not, he smelled like a goat. A goat straight from Satan's firm. You could say that a sane person would have gotten out of there fast. But as I said above, I struggled with mental health and had been in the middle of an anxiety attack, so my brain took time to function under stress. I was not in the right mindset at all. Eventually, I broke free from the frozen state and ran to my car. When I closed the car door, I found the man still smiling at me. I could hear his low chuckle, like he was enjoying seeing me all freaked out. The fact that he didn't chase me messed up with my head even more. You want to know why? Because I figured out he was just there watching me doing my business. And I'm 200% sure that he had eyes on me the entire time I relieved myself. This scared the hell out of me, and I surely haven't gone for a drive on my own since. Hello, this is Trisha from Mumbai, India. This incident happened right after my 18th birthday. One night, I was scrolling through Facebook, lying on my bed, when a text popped up in my messenger. It was from a total stranger. Like always, I ignored it. But then he kept on texting until I responded. He said his name was Andy. He was 24 at the time and worked as a photographer. We chatted briefly about normal stuff, and then he started telling me that he could see me. I obviously thought he was kidding, so I brushed it off. A few minutes later, he started to be really creepy. He went on to say where I was sitting, what I was wearing. Mother Freaker even described my room. It scared me because I had just moved out and was living on my own in a studio apartment. I immediately blocked him and checked my windows and doors just to be on the safe side. And as you can guess, sleep hardly came that night. Cut to next week. I again got a text from Andy. This time, he was using a different account. I was about to block him when he told me that my boyfriend was cheating on me. I was shocked because I hadn't posted anything about my relationship on social media. Also, I hadn't told anyone. I ignore his messages once again, but eventually, I found out that my boyfriend was indeed cheating on me with a girl from his neighborhood. This made me trust Andy. However, when I asked how he knew about my BF, he said, "I've got special powers." That he was a prophet of God and could sense evil people. Maybe it was my depressed mind, suffering from a terrible breakup, that made me cling to Andy, even though he was extremely weird. Slowly, Andy started brainwashing me against my friends and family. My grades suffered as I was in my second year of college. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. The negativity that he sowed in me kept eating me alive. We had a huge fight, and I blocked him for good. That night, I was studying in my room when I felt eyes on me, like someone was watching me from a secret hiding place. I took a quick scan of my room when suddenly the power went out. I switched on the flashlight on my phone and was looking for a candle when a flash took place in my room. Like someone took a picture of me with a photography camera. I quickly turned my head to the window and saw a guy sitting on a nearby tree branch. It was dark, so all I could see was his silhouette. But then I slowly pointed my phone's flashlight towards the window. Under the dim, fainting light, I saw a middle-aged man with a huge grin just watching me. He waved at me as our eyes met and then continued clicking pictures of me. He had no fear of being seen. Instead, he enjoyed seeing the terror in my eyes. I screamed and ran to the washroom, which felt like the only safe place to hide from this creepy man's eyes. I called up my parents, who lived in another city. My dad told me to call the police until they arrived at my house. But when the police came and searched the area, they found no one. My landlord also reported to the cops that someone broke into the electric shaft of the building and messed up the wires, resulting in a power cut. I started getting random texts from numbers, and I was sure that they were from Andy, or whatever his real name was. The middle-aged man said he saw me on my way home from university and fell in love with me. He even asked me to marry. My depression worsened by then, so I went to live with my parents. My dad filed an FIR against this man, but due to his fake profiles and not enough info, the police couldn't track him down. I deactivated my social media accounts and also changed my number to make sure he didn't find me ever again. I didn't see him after that, and I somehow finished college staying at my aunt's place. I almost forgot about these, but then one day, I reponed my old Facebook account. 10 to 15 texts popped up in my messenger from different accounts. I quickly blocked all of them, and while doing this, I also ended up reading them as well. Most of them were about how much the man misses me and loves me. But there was this one last text that he sent that still gives me goosebumps when I think about it. It read, "Roses are red, violets are blue. If you ever feel alone, I am always watching you."
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.